Good morning, listening audience. You know what time it is. It's Sunday morning. It's always an exciting show. It's always great to be on these airwaves and bring this information to you. And it's just so much always going on. But thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for those that's going to call in. Thank you for those that's listening locally and around the world. The J. Rice Show, we're expanding. We got some new things going on. And it's you make sure you listen in. I got a great, awesome guest that's on this morning with me, as I always do. Try to bring you the information. When you call in, be nice to Joe. Joe's on the ones and twos doing all the technical stuff. You nice to Joe. Joe be nice to you. So we have a smooth transition between this interactivity that we got going on called the J. Rice Show, that call-in platform. The number to call in is 843-308-9564. This show, of course, is being brought to you by my sponsors, the Askew Paint and Body Shop, Dorothy's Funeral Home, F. Brisbane Mortuary Transport, VIP Bistro, Gyrus Place, Charlotte, North Carolina, Johnson Hall Funeral Home, Hannibal's Kitchen, The Family Seafood Market, Checkmasters, Check Cashing on Rivers Avenue, and of course, the supporting sponsor, The Chronicle, only black press still around. The J. Rice Show has expanded, so now, here we go. If you don't get a chance to listen to the show, we've created a podcast. There's ability. If you go to WJNI website, and click on podcast, you can now listen to the J. Rice Show anytime you want to, any of the previous shows. It'll be updated. So thank you, my sponsors. And, you know, when you go there, you'll see, have that opportunity to listen to my previous shows. And then what you also find when you get there, a very good looking black man. So go to the website, WJNI, click on podcast. You'll see that good looking black man. And you'll also have the opportunity to listen to some of the previous shows. Great addition to the J. Rice Show. And also on Saturdays, 1 to 2, don't ever forget to listen to David Mack every Saturday from 1 to 2. The information that we're sharing here on the J. Rice Show is worthy enough to expand the access on WJNI 106.3. So that's why this podcast was formed. Thank you again to my sponsors. Thank you, WJNI, for finding this podcast and this show informative enough, but more important to have extended on to the podcast. We're growing. So we're at 1 million. We're going to be at 2 million soon. Let's just all we'll get there together. Gun violence in America, Georgia, Colorado, back to Georgia, Lexington, Kentucky. I'm not sure what happened in Virginia, but what I do know and what I have heard is that the police did not have their body cam on. That's one of the things that my only takeaway from what happened in Virginia. I still don't know all the details, but I do know that much. I have heard that being said. Have we become numb to another death due to gun violence? Just last Sunday, I mentioned news coverage and copycats. Well, I think then we were talking about the Atlanta issue. Now, you know, when we look at the news this week, there's just ongoing issues around gun violence in America. My question to you, the listening audience, 843-308-9564. Do you feel safe? Do you feel safe going to the grocery store, gas stations? You know, I'm not ready to eat in anywhere, but just to pick up food, going for a walk, do you feel safe? Are you now paying more attention to your surroundings? You know, I find myself yesterday evening picking up a few items in Walmart. You know, Walmart's always busy. I find myself realizing that I'm at the front of the store in the scan aisle. So now I'm scanning one item and looking up. So, you know, this is what I guess we've had to come to. You know, again, I'm sure my military experience kind of led me to feel that that's how I had to approach just scanning an item at a grocery store, because I had to pay attention to my surroundings. What do our kids have to look forward to? At this rate, it's very sad. What conversations are you having with our kids about these ongoing issues? What's your plans? What's your solutions to them? Gun violence in America is just amazing. It's go from one situation to another. It just never stops. What conversation are you having with your kids? What conversation are you having with our youth about this? What are the plans? What are the solutions? Maybe we should look to them for plans and solutions, but we got to look to somebody for some plans and solutions to the gun violence. The border. What are we doing there? How do you feel about Biden's handoff, like a football player, like a quarterback to a running back? How do you feel about Biden's handoff to Vice President Harris to manage and control what, you know, we know and will be his first major crisis? How do you feel about the handoff? Do you feel that she can handle this job? Do you feel that she's the right person for it? Just simply by the amount of attention it's getting, what's your thoughts? Got a caller online. Let me go right to the caller. Good morning, caller. Welcome to WJNI 106.3. You're on the Jay Wright Show.
Hello, Mr. Jay Wright.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm well, ma'am. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Fantastic. So you asked the question, do you feel safe? I feel safe because, you know, God wants to be prayed up. When we cover our family and friends and people, the body of Christ under the blood, we can feel safe going anywhere because God is over us, cover us. He has angels charge over us, you know.
Yes,
we don't have to be afraid, but okay, we just stay prayed up, you know.
Yes, okay, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Well, God really lets us know, man, I have to always pray, yeah.
I know that is critical, and I know that's a big part.
I'll be watchful, though. I'll still be watchful.
Yes, ma'am.
God really say watch as well as pray.
Absolutely, because yeah, that's what I was going to tell you. Wright, on the Jay Wright Show, I'm going to tell you, ma'am, pay attention to your surroundings. Watch what's going on around you.
Oh, yeah. I sure do.
I need you to call up next Sunday and the Sunday after that and the Sunday after that and pay attention to the Jay Wright Show. All right, ma'am?
All right. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you for always calling in. Take care, ma'am.
All right, then. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, caller. Now, as we talk about the border, and I talked about the attention it's getting, just recently our representative, Lindsey Graham, went there, and I'm 1,000%, and I call me up and tell me if I'm wrong, I'm 1,000% certain that it was not for a solution, more of an opportunity to spur and spin negative toward the Biden administration. That's just my thought. And the only way I arrive from that thought, based on this. My observation to what I've seen from a diverse, separate, and nowhere near equal Congress brings me to that thought. Now, I got a lot of respect for elected officials. I got a lot of respect for Lindsey Graham. I got a lot of respect for President Joe Biden. I got a lot of respect for Vice President Kamala Harris, because they've all signed up to do something that not anybody's going to do, right? I got a lot of respect for them. But, of course, we all, as taxpayers and citizens, we have the right to question some things, and we also have a right to see things and bring them to attention either to you, the listening audience, or just to our family and friends. So did he go there for a solution, or did he go there to spin negative toward the Biden administration? You can call up and tell me if I'm right or wrong here. Georgia, if you live there and you're listening, you're more than welcome to call up, because I need to get an understanding about what's going on in Georgia. Who convinced your governor to roll out these new voter suppression tactics? Who convinced him to be first? The Georgia representative that got arrested for knocking at the door? Here's where she went wrong. What she needed was, she needed about 2,000 more people with her, with body armor and weapons, and some of them needed to have been prior service members, and she didn't need to go knock on the door. They should have just went there and knocked the door down. That's seem to be a more, you know, seem how we get out now. So that's where she went wrong. But Georgia, call out. It takes a very special group of legislators. And I'm gonna say the term special. I'm gonna be with respect to the term special. You know, I use the term special as not normal, different. It takes a special group of legislators to target passing out water to people in the line as a criminal offense. It takes a special group of people, and again, I said special as a not normal, a little different. You know, these are the times when, you know, leaders, there's two different types of leaders, right? But these are the times when leaders take an action like this and requires and put forth strong, tough reactions. So I say to you, the listening audience, get over what they've done. Just get over it. Don't worry about it. Just get over what they've done. Get over whatever tactic they've put in our place. Get over whatever roadblock or obstacle they've put in our place. Everyone should be organizing right now to make that special group of legislators extremely uncomfortable. We should be organizing right now to make them very uncomfortable. Here's how we make them uncomfortable. My solution. There should be a water supply point set up at every parking lot in and around every polling location in America. Hear me. There should be a water supply point and or food, whatever distribution, at every parking lot and polling location in America. Set it up, not so that you have to give it to them in line. Set it up so that they can get it before they go up, or they have their right to go back and get it if, for some reason, the line is long. Organize and get all available vehicles in your community to transport people to vote. Bring back that 50-60s organized effort. Add a little swag to it. Change it up a little bit. But more importantly, reaction, strong, tough reaction to a special group of people to make them uncomfortable about something similar as this. That's all you do. Just set up a water supply point. Set up a place that you can feed the people before they go up. I'm almost sure that they'd have to relook at that, but then they'll find a way to make that, you know, against the law as well. So just take new tactics. Fox News, lawsuit by Dominion. Thank you, Dominion, for filing a defamation case. Why is this very extremely important? You should not be able to go out and spread lies and promote a smear campaigns with a more pack of lies. You should just not be able to do that. So when you do that, then you should be challenged. It happens every day. People do it every day, whether it's Fox, whether it's Dominion, whether it's CNN, whether it's MSNBC, regardless, it happens every day. So we got to challenge that. And I think Dominion is doing the right thing by challenging them in this case. So we always know that one way to change things is to hit people in the pocket. Is that what they say? So if you got to meet these lies with tough resistance. Your views are based on where you get your information from. And every case in America, where you get your information is how you view things. That's just typically how it works. So I don't get my information from anybody. So I look at all the information and then I make my own judgment, my own assessment. I'm a leader. That's what leaders do. So I look at them all. But you should not be able to go around spreading lies and so on and so forth. You should be responsible. Good morning. Call, I welcome to the show. Is this Judge Tracy Hunter?
Yes, it is. Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. It is a pleasure. Indeed,
well, likewise.
A pleasure.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be a guest on your show this morning.
Well, the pleasure is mine, Judge Tracy Hunter. Judge Tracy Hunter, I'm going to give you a chance here in just a few minutes to talk about Judge Tracy Hunter and who she is. But I want to make sure I mention to the listening audience, because, you know, Mount Pleasant and South Carolina and the Charleston area, and this radio show, WJNI 106.3, I know Judge Tracy Hunter, whereas a lot of the listeners may not know. Judge Tracyon, I want to say to you, I supported you when I lived in Cincinnati those 13 years. I supported your campaign. I knew what you were going to do when you got elected because of what you said that you would do during the time that you campaigned. And I cannot thank you enough for giving us, Judge Tracy Hunter, what I, John Wright, on the Jay Wright Show determined is our modern day Ruth Ginsburg. Thank you, ma'am, so much.
Thank you so much. That's an incredible honor.
Well, it is an honor well deserved. So tell us about Judge Tracy Hunter. Thank you so much. I got so many people that wants to hear from you.
Well, thank you so much. And again, it's my esteemed honor to be here and a guest this morning. I'll just start off by saying that I'm a pastor. I was actually a pastor when I ran for office and was elected to judge of the Hamilton County Juvenile Court. I'm the senior pastor of the Western Hills Brethren in Christ Church in Cincinnati, Ohio. I'll be celebrating my 12th year anniversary in July. But in 2009, I ran for juvenile court after about 18 years as a practicing lawyer in Cincinnati, Ohio. I graduated from the University of Cincinnati College of Law, Miami University, and Oxford, Ohio undergraduate. And during my time as a lawyer, I saw what so many people read about every day, and that is the disparity in the treatment of justice, or should I say rather injustice, within the criminal justice system. And so as a lawyer, I purposed to do my part to change the system, and I didn't realize before I entered into the system of just how not only difficult a task and challenge that would be, but almost quite honestly impossible. And but it didn't deter me, because I knew that again, African American people overwhelmingly make up the majority of the justice system, and not just in the adult system, but it starts with the children's system. And what more people are now coming to understand or to hear the terminology, the school-to-prison pipeline, I knew it already 30 years ago, and I saw it firsthand, and I set out to do something about it. And so after practicing in the as a defense attorney for adults and children, I was particularly disturbed by what I saw in the juvenile court when I would represent the children. Oftentimes, the children, first of all, was majority African Americans, and oftentimes they didn't have lawyers. They weren't represented either because their parents couldn't afford an attorney, or because they didn't qualify for an attorney. And I think overall, the parents didn't understand the fact that even though it was a juvenile system, that juvenile system feeds the adult system, and eventually those charges or those offenses, as they're termed for the juveniles, will eventually find their way into the adult system. They would influence them. A lot of people have this misnomer that, you know, juvenile offenses don't affect children, or it does not follow them, but it absolutely does follow them. And so I saw the viciousness of the prosecutors. The system itself is supposed to rehabilitate children. That's what the juvenile court is. But the juvenile court, in my experience, was far from that here in Hamilton County or Cincinnati, Ohio. And I know it's the same not only here, but across the United States of America. And these children become the feeder. They feed into the adult system. And now we have privatized prisons. And so obviously you can see the impact that and the importance of creating a commodity for the adult system, and that's the juvenile system, that's the children's system. I'll continue on, but do you want to interrupt me?
No. You know, I tell you, one of the things I do would like to ask and make sure my audience are aware is that you literally went in and you forced the juvenile court to change its entire reporting system and practices. What did you do there, and why was that important as the Ohio Supreme Court?
Well, I absolutely did. When I was elected, and first of all, let me say clearly, because a lot of your audience may be familiar, may have seen the infamous picture of me being dragged out of a court room.
Yeah, we're going to get to that too, ma'am. We're certainly going to get to that.
Yeah. So I want to say that talk about the opposition and the resistance to change. And so as soon as I was sworn in, because I was actually should have been sworn in July 2011, but because I had to sue the system to prove that I won and make them count the votes, kind of like what's going on in Georgia right now,
right.
I had to sue. And after millions of dollars in a lawsuit, and 2 years later, I was finally sworn in as juvenile court judge. And with the first 3 months on the bench, I started to see disparities. There were reports that I had to file as a judge every single month with the Ohio Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And the clerk's office would prepare those reports, and they would send them to me. And they would have a listing of all of the cases in the court, whether they were dependency, abuse, neglect cases, whether they were delinquency cases, child support cases, whatever the type of charge or case that it was in the system. We were supposed to report those numbers to the Supreme Court. Well, after 3 months, I began to notice that, or actually within the first 3 months, I began to notice that the numbers were wrong, and they weren't adding up. And the numbers that Hamilton County was reporting to the Ohio Supreme Court absolutely were not matching up. And I felt uncomfortable, especially as the first African-American juvenile court judge who I knew they were scrutinizing me and possibly setting me up. So I was reluctant to sign those reports, even though they were being prepared by the clerk's office, because I could see that the numbers weren't matching. The columns and the rows just did not match up on the type of cases that we were hearing, as well as the outcome of those cases.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally just wrote the Ohio Supreme Court, and I said, hey, something's wrong. The numbers are not adding up. I don't feel comfortable signing these reports. I didn't realize at the time that the Ohio Supreme Court was a part of the problem and a part of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually turned against me, even though I was reporting that the numbers were wrong. And so they told me to sign the report, but to make a notation. So I would make a notation that the numbers were wrong and that I didn't agree, but I'm signing them because I'm being instructed by the Ohio Supreme Court. Well, that led to the Ohio Supreme Court actually coming into the juvenile court, because I began to make it public, and I kept a paper trail of what I was doing. And
right.
So they couldn't ignore it. And mm-hmm. So they ended up sending their case management people into the juvenile court. Turned out all of our numbers were wrong. The reporting system was totally wrong. And even when a year or so later, when I was, yanked because I was exposing that kind of corruption, they were still fixing the system. They literally had to revamp the entire reporting system of the juvenile court case management system in order to bring it into accuracy and compliance.
Well, you are, again, I repeat, you are small in stature, but you are our modern day Ruth Ginsburg. You're tough as nails. And in 2010, the election lawsuit that you filed changed Ohio federal law to ensure provisional ballots were properly counted. Your
yes.
your landmark lawsuit, your landmark case, Hunter versus Hamilton County, has been cited now in numerous rulings. In fact, can you speak to that?
Yes, absolutely, it has. In fact, so many times I don't even know. I recall myself sitting in a continuing legal education class over 5 years ago probably, and they were talking about my lawsuit in that class, and I had no idea. And so, yes, when the votes were counted in November 2010, I was told that I lost, and my opponent, a white Republican male, John Williams, had won. And I'll just be honest, I know for some people this sounds crazy, but this is a gospel station, and
yes,
I'm a pastor.
Yes, ma'am.
I used to actually have a gospel station here in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And so it shouldn't sound strange when I say that God told me that I won that election. And even though no black person, male nor female, had ever won that seat before, and no Democrat had ever won that seat before, God told me that I won that election.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they told me that my opponent won and they actually called the election for him, I set out to get a lawyer and to prove that I, in fact, won that election. And so I got an attorney, Jennifer Branch. Initially, she didn't, she said, well, this is a state law case, and so I really can't do anything because voting is state law. There's nothing we can do. And I said, no. I believe that my constitutional rights have been violated. And so let's look at this from a 14th Amendment standpoint. And she took my advice, and we filed a lawsuit in federal court, and it took 18 months for us to prove that, in fact, on election night, November 2010, I actually won the election, but they refused to count the votes. What you see literally going on in Georgia is very real, and the resistance, even them dragging that legislator out, they get really upset when we start attacking the inequities of the voting system, because that's literally how they control the country. So 18 months, I endured all kind of abuse and name-calling by the Republican Party, threats, everything unimaginable. I didn't think it could get worse than that, quite honestly, because I filed that lawsuit and dared to challenge them. They appealed my lawsuit, Hunter v. Hamilton County Board of Election, to the U.S. Supreme Court at least 6 times. They appealed it. And at the end of the day, I won. They were forced to count those votes. And it did change election law, federal election law, and it's been, as you stated, Mr. Wright, cited repeatedly, and it will probably continue to be recited repeatedly because of the impact that it made in ensuring that those provisional ballots that get counted, that before that time, they were sweeping under a rug. They were forced, in fact, that was the way that they were stealing elections. They were forcing people to vote provisionally that right. really qualified to vote legitimately, mm-hmm. and then they would take those provisional ballots that didn't get counted until 10 days later, and by that time they had caught the election, people moved on, and they just accepted they lost. But because God told me I won, I refused to accept that, and now as a result of that, that law, those laws were changed, and now more people's votes are being counted, and more people are getting into office that should have as a result of my lawsuit.
You know, earlier in the show, I was talking about Dominion's lawsuit against Fox. Now, the Inquirer and the TV station there sued you for prohibiting the publishing of children's faces and names.
Absolutely.
Why? Why did that happen? And is that not remarkable for you to not want to expose these kids, and they then want to demand that you do?
When it comes to African American children, they're willing to bend policies, laws, rules, et cetera. As you know, being in the media business, it was always the standard, particularly the Associated Press kind of set that standard, that you just didn't publish the names of children, minors. In fact, they still follow that. You can find cases right now where a child has been accused of murder, and the news article or the TV will state, we're not publishing the name of that child because it's a minor. However, when I took my seat, immediately they wanted to employ a second or different set of rules for the black children, not the white children, mm-hmm. because there were cases that are pretty hideous in the juvenile court where the offense was allegedly committed by a white child, but the media had no desire to not only publish their names or show their faces, they didn't even talk about the cases. But I had a very high-profile case involving black juveniles that were accused of beating a white man. Mm-hmm. And those were the allegations. And the media here wanted to put the children's names. The kids were 12 years old. They wanted to put the names of the children in the media. They wanted to publish their photos. And I had a duty to protect the law, first of all, to follow the law, but protect the children because they were, in fact, children. Mm-hmm. The white supremacist organization showed up outside of the children's school, elementary school, wow. to confront the children. These are adults. And so as a duty to protect, I put in writing an order that the media, TV or print, were not allowed to print the names of the children or show their faces. And oh my God, the attack and the assault against me was unbelievable. And so, yes, the Cincinnati Inquirer, a Republican newspaper and the only daily newspaper here in Cincinnati and has been for quite some time, they sued me along with WCPO Channel 9, which is a Scripps Howard media company. And I was embroiled in that suit. In fact, until I was accused of crimes later, that lawsuit was still going on. And the prosecutors who were representing the Board of Election against me then started representing me unethically in the cases that were brought against me, and they absolutely wanted the kids' names and faces in the media. So the persons who were against my rulings were actually representing me. And in fact, one of the reporters ended up being one of the reporters from that TV station. Don't know how that happened, John, Mr. Wright, ended up being on the jury.
Yeah, trust me. I know it. I've been. Yeah, go ahead, ma'am. Keep on.
Yeah. So, it was unbelievable. The assault. In fact, it was so bad. I employed through the court a child psychologist to determine the impact of publishing the children's names and faces in the media. And the child psychologist absolutely came back, white child psychologist, independent of Cincinnati, and absolutely determined that it would be harmful, very harmful on the rehabilitation of those children to print their names and faces in the media. And Mr. Wright, you know full well what happens,
right.
How the internet drags people. It would have been impossible for those children to have been rehabilitated and to go on and to have productive lives if I had not stood my ground in that. But it cost dearly, and so all of the media came against me because I dared to protect the children and, quite honestly, follow the law and follow policies that have been in place as law. And, you know, I was a journalist before I became a lawyer,
and
it was always the practice not to print names or show faces of children.
You know, Judge Hunter, and you'll forever be a judge. It don't matter what anybody says. You achieve that position, and you will be a judge. You will be Judge Hunter to Jay Wright the rest of my life. And, you know, in 2013, you outlaw shackling of juveniles in court. And that was met with resistance.
Absolutely. April 2013. In fact, before I made the order and outlawed it, I sat down with the sheriff's department and with the law enforcement of the juvenile court to bring them on board. I wanted them to be able to buy into what was I thought was right, and that was it, because it was already working in the adult system. When you have adults, unless there's a reason for them not to be shackled, like violent or something, even the adults are not shackled when they're sitting in the courtroom. But our children would come into court before me. It quite honestly looked like a scene out of Roots. It was really traumatic watching these children, some of them really tiny. Their hands would be shackled, their belt, their stomachs would be shackled, and their feet would be shackled. And I just, you know, I tried to get the court and the sheriffs to work with me, and finally I just outlawed it in my courtroom and said, no, the children cannot be shackled during these hearings. You bring them in. They're not animals. They're not slaves. Bring them in, and they're human beings, and let's treat them as such. So I outlawed it. Of course, they came against me on that as well. But then 3 years later, in 2016, I believe, the Ohio Supreme Court agreed, basically, and outrooted across the state of Ohio that children may not be shackled without a hearing and probable cause, which is what I had also had in my order, that short of an order or a probable cause hearing to determine that, you know, that they are a risk, then they may not be shackled. And so I did 3 years before what the Ohio Supreme Court has done, and now all judges across the state of Ohio must follow that ruling in their courtrooms not to shackle children.
Outstanding, outstanding. Applaud, applaud, applaud. Judge Tracy Hunter, I want to say something to you because, you know, there's a lot of people that may not know. There was a prosecutor that was on your case before the dragging you out, how that appeared. Mr. Dinkelacker, I knew him. I knew all about him while I lived there. Please tell my listening audience here in the Lowcountry how that gentleman had just previously had a car accident that, if I remember, I think he may have killed somebody.
He killed a black woman.
Right, killed a black woman, drove from the scene, and nothing happened. Please tell my listening audience about that.
Yeah, and the sad part about it is he was on my case. He ended up taking over my case. He was on the Court of Appeals. And then the judge who heard the trial, my first trial, Norbert Nadel, he retired, and then Dinkelacker was elected to his seat. And Dinkelacker, oh, my God, he had so many conflicts of interest. His daughter practiced in front of me. In fact, there were many judges' daughters who were working in the prosecutor's office who did not like me as a judge because of the type of rulings that I was making, as well as the fact that I would not let the prosecutor's office run ramshod over the juvenile court, which is what they had been accustomed to. The Republican judges before me, all in relationship, some of them were prosecutors in Hamilton County, and they would the type of rulings that I was beginning to making, they were landmark. In fact, one of my rulings in, that they resisted, in fact, they brought that up and tried to use that as one of the charges against me. They were so angry that I ruled that prosecutors had to turn over exculpatory evidence, such as police reports, to juvenile defendants. Mm. And they were so angry and so mad about that because they weren't used to judges standing up against them.
Right.
And so here's Dinkelacker, whose daughter practices before me, who also had a hand in ruling on some of those cases that were appealed from my courtroom to his courtroom as the Court of Appeals judge. He was ethically prohibited from ruling over my case. Not only that, there are three or four Supreme Court decisions in Ohio that state that judges in the same county cannot preside over issues or matters involving other judges. But they wanted me so bad that they literally, they violated laws, they violated rules. Dinkelacker ends up over my case. And this man had literally one night had crossed the center line. That's what all of the initial reports stated.
That's right.
TV and newspaper said he crossed the center line. He ended up hitting a black woman that was, and she was actually in the street, but she was standing on the center line or crossing. And he crossed, according to the media reports, crossed the line. He hit her. She was then hit by a second car. She died. Nothing happened. I don't even think we could even find evidence that he even took off work, to be honest. And nothing ever happened. And then when his family, during my trial, I had actually asked him to step off my case.
Right.
Number one, he was ethically prohibited. Number two, he killed someone, a black woman.
And he left the scene. He did leave the scene.
Well, they talked to him. I didn't hear that he left. He did, like, it wasn't like a drive-off.
Right, okay.
What you're implying.
Okay.
My understanding is that supposedly, according to the media reports, and that's all I know, he did stay there.
Okay.
But we don't know about sobriety tests. We don't know about, these are standard tests that should be performed. We don't know if they checked his cell phone because they did report he crossed the center line. And then if you go and check out the media now, they tried to scrub all of that off of the internet.
Oh, yes, ma'am. It's no longer there.
Yes. And so they tried to cover for him. And then in the middle of my trial, the family filed a wrongful death lawsuit against him. And guess what? He had an independent visiting judge. No judge in Hamilton County handled his case. He got a judge outside the county, which is what should have happened to me when I was falsely accused of crimes by the prosecutor who represented the Hamilton County Board of Election against me, Joe Dieters, later. But he was allowed to choose special prosecutors that were actually friends of his and give them millions of dollars and vacation with them and then bring these people to bring false charges against me after I filed ethics complaints against the prosecutor's office with the Ohio Supreme Court. I filed an ethics complaint against Joe Dieters and three prosecutors for their mishandling of juvenile court cases in my courtroom, as well as them representing me in cases when they were also, the election lawsuit wasn't over, and they were still representing the Board of Election against me and then jumped on my case to represent me at the same time, which is totally unethical and illegal.
No.
So when I filed ethics complaints against Joe Dieters, it was probably about 2 weeks later that he then falsely accused me of crimes and then, as you know, eventually brought overall 10 felony charges against me after I filed ethics complaints against him.
That lasted for 10 years.
Yes, still going on. I'm still fighting the nine of the felony charges.
Oh, my God.
Ended up getting voluntarily dismissed by them after I proved that a computer forensic specialist proved that they had tampered with the computers and tampered with my judicial entries. And then suddenly, when I was prepared for trial a second time, because they wanted me to step down, and I said, absolutely not, and I didn't do anything wrong, and I'll fight this all the way. And they said, well, if you just step down from being judged, then we won't try you a second time. I said, no, have at it, because I didn't do anything wrong, and I'm not going to relinquish deceit that God gave me.
That's right.
So I forced them to try me again. And guess what? Just before, in fact, the day we showed up for trial the second time, we had just got the forensic expert that I didn't have the first trial that I went through.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have the resources, and for whatever reason, my lawyer did not get the computer expert that I told him to get the first time around, because I knew that the paper trail that I had in court and the evidence of the computers would prove that I did nothing at all. I knew that right from the beginning. But the first judge, Norbert Nadel, refused to allow us to go in and see the computers, number one. He refused to make them preserve the evidence, which is just standard in allegations against a person, especially where supposed computers are involved. We didn't get to see those computers until 2006. 2015, it was in late 2015, just before I went to trial, 2016. And then once we were able, my two new lawyers who were white and Jewish were able to get into the court, of course, and get access that my first lawyer, who was African-American, didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
when the computer specialist proved all of what the some of the stuff, well, the evidence was still right there at the juvenile court, where they had changed my entries, and you'd have a copy of my entry, and then the entry that was changed was still in the computer system.
Oh.
And so when we were able to pull all of that information down, and then we presented to the court the tampering of evidence, that's when suddenly that trial that was supposed to begin in January 2016, I showed up for trial that day, and they dismissed 9 felony charges against me voluntarily because we had just proved that they tampered with evidence, and they knew that if we brought that out, the ramification of us bringing that out publicly, and they tried to cover it up by dismissing all those charges against me.
Well, you know, Judge Hunter, and I only got a few more minutes, but I tell you, you and I can, this could be my show. You could be my entire show. So I'm hoping that, again, I get you on at some point again. You are an example of what Women's History Month is about. Your story is an amazing story. Give my listeners your the Tracy Hunter Defense Fund website for anyone here in the Lowcountry that have heard your story and that would like to engage with you beyond this conversation. Can you do that, please?
Absolutely, and I would love for your listeners to engage. We've been trying to get the story out across the country since this first happened.
Absolutely.
Really hard because the Cincinnati media has controlled their portrayal of me, which has now gotten, of course, picked up with all the national media. You know how that works.
Mm-hmm.
And so my truth has never gotten out. And so people can go to my website, Tracy Hunter Legal Defense Fund.com. Tracy Hunter, and Tracy is spelled TRACIE, Tracy Hunter Legal Defense Fund.com. And they can go to that website, get any information that they want. There should be a way, a contact a number or email for persons to reach out to me if they have questions. I'm also on Facebook. And so if persons, you know, I've never had an issue, you know, talking about my case openly or answering any questions because truth is on my side.
Right.
And so I just haven't had the opportunity from a media's perspective to tell my story because they created a narrative about me in order to hide what they were really doing, to hide the changes that I was making, to hide. They didn't really want it to change. They don't want the system to change because this is how you make money. You feed these children, black children in particular, you feed them into the system, and then eventually they know they're going to be in that adult system, and they have to keep that going. And so when persons like me go into the system to bring reform, they don't want that. They have to oppose it by any means necessary.
Well, Judge Tracy Hunter, I want to thank you so much, ma'am. We won't even talk about what happened and you know, what the national media put out there about you in the courtroom. We won't even need to get into that because people know who Tracy Hunter is now, so they can make a determination when they go and see who you are on what happened on that day. You know, I don't want to even give them credit for any of that. But I do know my Cincinnati mom, Kathy Alexander is listening, and when I told her I was going to have you on my show, she says, I'm going to call her right now. So she told me when I lived in Cincinnati, whatever Tracy Hunter asked you to do, you do it. And I thank her for listening, and I thank you, ma'am, for taking time to get on the show again. Change is good, but it all depends on who's making the change sometimes. That's not received real well. Thank you so much, Tracy Hunter. Judge Tracy Hunter, Pastor Tracy Hunter, you're an icon, and you are what Women's History Month is about.
Well, I words really can't express how you made me feel by honoring me during this time of month, because of my story, so many other people walk away with a different impression, and it really hurts because I tried so hard and I made so many changes. We didn't even get into the grid of all of the things that I was able to do, but it all gets overshadowed by that day of being dragged horribly and you know, like a piece of garbage on national TV. It all gets dragged by the false charges that were brought against me. And so whenever a person like you, Mr. John Wright, who knows the story and who knows the truth, and wants to help get that truth out, gives me an opportunity. I am most grateful. And so thank you so much for honoring me this month. It means more than you will ever know. And I, too, want to thank Kathy Alexander, because she was one of those women who held up my arms mm-hmm. during the most difficult. My dad died in the middle of all of that as a result, I believe, of the stress. He had a heart attack and died. Mm-hmm. And it was persons like your mom, you know, Kathy Alexander, who was there, who loved on me and helped me to hold my head up in public, even though I knew that I was innocent. They knew it. But when people are coming against you like that, and you're getting fiery darts, you know, literally shot in your back, your front, and every which way, it's hard. But they helped me to stand. And people like you that helped to get that truth out there and support me, and that helps me to stand. And so, Mr. Wright, thank you so much. And thank you to all of your listening audience for giving me the wonderful opportunity to come and to just share just a snippet of my story today. And I pray that all of them be blessed, and that you continue to be blessed as well for the work, the great work that you're doing.
Thank you very much, Judge Tracy Hunter. It has certainly have been a pleasure. And you have a good day, ma'am. And everyone that's listening, don't www.TracyIEHunterLegalDefenseFunds.com. Thank you, ma'am. Have a good day.
You too. God bless you. All bye-bye. Right.
You all heard, as I termed her and will forever term her as our modern-day RBG, about short lady with big, big, broad shoulders and a fighter. I was one that when I lived there in Cincinnati that voted for her. I was one that knew what she was going to do when she got in office. I was one that supported what she was going to do, because change is not good unless you're on board with the change. Very few people can accept change. Change is tough. And it's even tougher when you don't agree with it. It's tough, especially when you don't agree with it. I want to thank her. I really want to thank her. And I think you all should Google her story and become more familiar with her. Enforcement is selective. I don't care what nobody says. Has been and always will be. You can look no further than just the other day in Georgia. That representative that was arrested for just knocking on the door. Enforcement selective. You can go and learn more about Judge Tracy Hunter, and you should, because it's important enough. You got to call. If you're a caller and you've heard her story and you have any questions or any concerns, anything you'd like to discuss, 843-308-9564 is the number. Load the lines up. I want to hear from you. Sharon Osborne, I don't feel bad for her in any way whatsoever. I think she was the last original host of The View or The Talk, one of those others. Some opinion comes with consequences, bottom line. Come with consequences. Evanston, Illinois, are they the model now for what reparation looks like? I want to thank their election officials for taking it up. The residents of Evanston, Illinois, has done something that their elected officials took up reparations, and they came up with a $10 million agreement as to how that's going to look. What does that mean for Charleston County residents? Why I asked that question? It's reparations. As most historians have said, and I don't know, I'm not a historian, that 60% of most people can trace their roots back here to South Carolina, to Charleston. Let's look at the scope, the requirements, and the qualifications of what that Evanston, Illinois reparation has done. Let's look at that, and then let's determine how that could be applied, or whether or not it should be applied here. But I do want to tell you something that I know of, and I think maybe you should look it up. Don't take my word for it. if the federal government is going to give a bank money and they're going to have these requirements and stipulations as it relates to how you get the money and how you use the money, to be quite honest with you, that's Community Reinvestment Act. That's a very old act. The Community Reinvestment Act has been around for a very long time. Look it up. Don't take my word for it. Community Reinvestment Act. That's where banks get money from the federal government. And those same requirements and stipulation that I think that's being attached to this reparations, they're also attached to the Community Reinvestment Act. Jay Wright believed on the Jay Wright Show that reparation should be taxes, should include some taxes, tax exemptions, and a whole lot of other things relating to taxes. Not a financial, not a dollar, but taxes. Things that can help you long term, right? But what I read and I look at as I look at the requirements kind of seem a lot like the Community Reinvestment Act. I've seen that before. Got a call on the line. Going to go right to the caller. Good morning, caller. Welcome to WJNI 106.3. You're on the Jay Wright Show.
Good morning, John Wright.
Good morning. This is my cousin Emily.
Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. Oh, I was listening to Judge Hunter. What a lady. What a lady. And what she endured was just so painful and so unfair to her, because she did the right thing, not tried to, did the right thing, and got ridiculed for everything that she did.
Right.
Unfair, very unfair.
Yeah. Emily, I tell you, her story is amazing. And, you know, just for me to know her and to be around her, you know, again, I give her that status because of who I know her to be. Got another call online. Yes. I really appreciate your call. You continue to listen and continue to call. This is my cousin now. I'm going to jump right into this next caller. Thank you so much, Emily, for calling in and being a part of the Jay Wright Show.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Have a good day.
Thank you. You do
thank
the same.
You. Bye-bye.
All right. And Emily's my cousin, and Emily's mom just celebrated her 90th birthday. That was my granddad's sister. Aunt Hilda just turned 90 years old. That was my granddad's sister. So I want to honor her. I want to celebrate her 90 years of living on this earth. That's my cousin, Em. Got another caller on the line. I'm going to go right to that caller. And again, if there's something I talked about that you want to talk about, call up. 843-308-95 is the number. Going right on to the next caller. Good morning, caller. Welcome to WJNI 106.3. You're on the Jay Wright Show.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, son.
Good morning. This is my Cincinnati mom. How are you this morning? And thank you for listening.
Oh, I couldn't help but listen. It was a phenomenal program, as always.
Thank you.
I thank you for acknowledging Judge Tracy Hunter, and I would hope that you might have her on again. She has yet to tell you that which she has gone through. But one of the things that I find that is so exciting, while incarcerated, she taught, she preached, and folks accepted Jesus Christ as their personal Lord and Savior. In the midst of all of that, I am just overwhelmed by all that she has done and she continues to do, and I thank you for giving her this platform.
This is my Cincinnati mom, and y'all, you know, you guys got either you know her or you will get to know her. But Ma, I'm gonna tell you something that you said that's powerful, and that is, you know, all that she endured that we don't even know about. I mean, you know, that dislistenatis don't even know about. You know, she's like a combat soldier because she went to war.
Yes. Yes, she did.
And again, there's so many things, so many elements to who she is that we, you know, that didn't get mentioned here this morning, and some of the things she endured. But, you know, if nothing else, I think I did exactly what you tell me to do, and that was to raise her awareness and her consciousness. And I thank you for your telling me what to do, as you love to do. And I do it, you know, so thank you.
Oh, and thank you. And you continue to pursue all that is for you, because you are enlightening so many people in ways you can't even imagine. So you have a great day. Love you.
Thank you, Ma. That's a full endorsement right there for my Ma. For my Cincinnati mom, full endorsement. Thank you, ma'am. Have a good day.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So y'all, you see the J-Rice Show, the extension of it. You know, those millions of listeners that we're talking about having on the J-Rice Show, they're in Cincinnati. They're in upper parts of North Carolina. They're listening. They're listening to the show, and I think it's a good thing. And, you know, ain't nothing more important than having another opinion. How are we, and where do we go when we only listen to one opinion? Where do we go? We go right back to that same situation I talked about earlier. If everybody in America had the same opinion, it wouldn't be democracy. It wouldn't be America. It will be, you know, it just will not be the same. So I'm very comfortable with who I am. I'm very comfortable with what I say. And I, at any given time, love dialogue. Ain't nothing better than dialogue. The only way to get us out of some of the situations that we're in is to educate each other about them. There's a lot I don't know about a lot of the listeners. There's a lot of things that a lot of listeners don't know about Jay Wright. But what you will get is you'll get Jay Wright putting that information out there and then giving you opinion to call in, and we can have a dialogue about it. We may agree to disagree, but more importantly, we have a dialogue. And that is what we're, and in some cases, we're missing in America. Nobody should be afraid to have an opinion or to voice a concern. That's unheard of. Matter of fact, we get nowhere if that is the case. Deshaun Watson, I want to talk about him because he's a South Carolina Clemson product. And boy, he's under the gun right now with a lot of sexual allegation charges. I don't know if they came up because he wanted to no longer be in Houston, but I know they came up. And when we talk about enforcement and we talk about selective, I'm big on accountability. If I say and do something, I'm accountable for it. You can hold me accountable for it. It's a very selective issue. And I don't support Sean Watson and nothing that he did. I don't support wrongdoings in general. I don't support that. Sean Watson has more than a dozen allegations against him. But do you guys remember a name, Chad Wheeler? Look it up. Chad Wheeler. Chad Wheeler. He's another NFL player. He almost killed his black girlfriend. Look him up. Chad Wheeler. He almost killed his black girlfriend. No press. Little to no press. Little to no press. Why? We live in a selective society. Bottom line. And it's okay, I guess, you know, as I talked about earlier, with the new voter suppression issues and they're not wanting to give you water while you're in line. I mean, if you're in line for 2-3 hours, then just set up a water supply site on site. Don't give it to them. Don't go up to the line. Just don't do it. We have to look at situations and then we have to counter them with reasonable, lawful rationale. Because, you know, typically what happens is that and I say this and I've been saying this for as long as I've been living. Society create the crimes that criminals commit, right? Society creates them. Criminals just commit them. So when you look at a situation like that where they say, okay, you can't do this and you can't do that and you can't do this. So then now you go up and you set up a water supply point. Now they have to, now that's a whole new change that they got to adjust to. So, you know, it again, it's always good for Jay Wright to have this opportunity to bring this information before you. My sponsors, Ask You Paint and Body Shop, Dorothy Funeral Home, F. Brisbane Mortuary Transport, VIP Bistro, Gyrus Place, Charlotte, North Carolina, Johnson and Hall Funeral Home, Hannibal's Kitchen, Family Seafood Market, the Check Cashing, Check Masters, Check Cashing Spot on Rivers Avenue, the new sponsor, The Chronicle, the Only Black Press. Make sure you go online to WJNI. Check out the podcast. Check out the new podcast, WJNI. And take a look at, go back and listen to some of the previous shows. But get tuned in. That podcast will be updated. And again, the information is worthy enough for an additional access. So that's what Jay and I has done. They've made this show more accessible for you to listen, audience. So if you don't, not aware, you can go. There is a podcast now. You can listen to the show. Thank you so much. Stay in peace.